It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
You've lost months of your warranty if it really was titled to somebody else. Why did that person bring it back? Traded in so early, maybe there's something really wrong with the vehicle, and now you have to do all this investigation about that. But to establish that it's an intentional violation is a much more difficult thing. People aren't, they're going to deny it, and that's when it comes in to help show if they've done this over and over again.
Consumer attorney Patty Anderson explained what consumer fraud is and what to do about it. And during this week's question and answer session, we talk about the law of self-defense, when you have it, and how far you can go in defending yourself when attacked in a school or residential setting. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 106, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. Banks have been under siege in recent weeks for widespread corner-cutting in the rush to process delinquent mortgages. But debt buyers have been doing it for years, with much worse abuses. At least with mortgages, the banks have the right address. But with debt buyers, the debt has been passed through so many hands over so many years that many times the companies are pursuing the wrong person or the charges have no lawful basis. The debt, typically from credit cards, auto loans, and utility bills, is sold by finance companies and banks in a vast secondary market, bundled into huge portfolios for pennies on the dollar. Debt buyers often sue without acquiring essential background information, in large part because that data adds to the price of each account. Although court rules state that anyone submitting an affidavit to a court against a debtor must have proof of that claim, with proper documentation of a debt's origin, history, and amount, debt buyer employees can sign up to 2,000 affidavits per day, or one every 13 seconds, making even perfunctory research impossible. Although there has been much fury over mortgage paperwork abuses, there has been little said about similar abuses in debt collections. In other news, last month, the Social Security Administration published final rules that will further reduce the time it takes to decide applications for disability benefits from those persons with the most severe disabilities, a process that currently takes less than 2 weeks on average. The new rules allow disability examiners to make fully favorable determinations for adult cases under the agency's Quick Disability Determination and Compassionate Allowance processes without medical or psychological consultant approval. It also will help the agency process other cases more efficiently by giving medical and psychological consultants more time to work on complex cases where their expertise is most needed. This year, more than 100,000 people benefited from fast-track disability processes and received decisions in a matter of weeks rather than the months and years it can sometimes take. Under this process, a predictive computer model analyzes specific data within the electronic disability file to identify cases where there is a high likelihood that the claimant is disabled, and currently identifies 88 specific diseases and conditions that clearly qualify for disability benefits. The final rules will be effective on November 12, 2010. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
It's time for the answer to our weekly quiz called, Is That Legal? Last week, we gave you a legal question and three possible answers, one of which was incorrect. Here's last week's question. In which two public benefits programs is there a limit on countable resources for an applicant to be eligible? A. Food stamps, or SNAP. B. Temporary assistance for needy families. Or C. Supplemental security income. The correct answers are A. Food stamps, or SNAP benefits, and C. Supplemental security income. Unlike the other two programs, there is no limit on countable resources for an applicant to be eligible for temporary assistance for needy families. Later in the show, we'll give you this week's quiz. Is that legal? For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault.
You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner, and it's time for our weekly question and answer session. Please tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Victoria from Richmond.
Welcome to the show, Victoria. What question do we have this week?
My question for this week is, when is it appropriate for somebody to defend themselves in school, and should they be punished for defending themselves?
Tell us briefly what happened and what type of discipline was handed out.
I was attacked during one of my classes, my chemistry class, by a girl that I do not know. And as a result, I had to go to the judiciary board. And their initial reaction was to suspend me for, I guess they said, fighting on school grounds. And I ended up getting probation instead after the hearing.
Well, Victoria, it sounds like you handled the situation by yourself pretty well, getting it knocked down from suspension to probation, because you do have a right to defend yourself, as anyone does, whether you're on the street, whether you're in a classroom, or as commonly happens between tenants. We see that quite often at legal aid. The question then becomes, when does your right to self-defense really end? And it ends when you're no longer in any danger, when you can either get away from the situation or you're no longer being attacked. Now, of course, making that judgment from hindsight is much easier than making it at the moment. And if you're in the fray at the moment, you know, you might end it when it's appropriate, and you might carry on a bit longer than would be necessary if you really had the benefit of hindsight. Nevertheless, people shouldn't be punished for that type of a misjudgment, if it even was a misjudgment at all. And I think that in your case, you were able to cast enough doubt on you being the aggressor or you carrying on longer than you should have to make the disciplinary board realize that you shouldn't have a punishment of suspension, that at worst you should have a probation and just be on guard for the future and not do this type of behavior in the future. Although, frankly, I'm sure you think that really you had the right to defend yourself and that the probation itself was too great of a punishment. And I suppose if there's no further incidents, it's a no harm, no foul. If another incident comes up, then I certainly would not hesitate not only to say that you acted appropriately in any further incident, but also that you acted appropriately in the prior incident, and that really the probation was put on more or less as a caution, but nothing that showed that you did anything wrong. Does that sort of explain the situation to you?
Yes, it does.
Okay, well, thank you very much for being on the show.
Ain't gonna let no
You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. Once again, we're at the law office of Patty Anderson, a consumer lawyer in Richmond, fighting for consumers, specializing in lemon law, warranty issues, and consumer fraud. Welcome back to the show, Patty.
Thank you. Nice to be back, Marty.
Well, this time we're going to be talking about consumer fraud. And would you tell our listeners what exactly is consumer fraud?
Consumer fraud is an intentional act that occurs often when a manufacturer or a seller, usually a seller, manufacturers don't usually intentionally defraud people, but the seller misrepresents its product in order to get you to buy it. And that misrepresentation then harms the consumer. It might cost you money. It might have you end up with a product that's not what it was promised to you to be. And then you can sue the person for fraud and recover your money, recover damages. It's an avenue to collect some money for punitive damages, exemplary damages, that will try to teach the seller a lesson. So what we often try to do when I have a consumer fraud case is to establish a pattern and practice of the seller. You know, does he do this to everybody? You try to establish that it was intentional, which is the hard part, because they will just say this was just a mistake. But for instance, there are scams out there, and we can probably name a bunch of them, but one in particular was happening by car dealers, and it's happening with other kinds of sellers of merchandise, roofers, gutters, this kind of thing, where they will give you cash back. They say, we're going to give you this certificate for cash back, or we're going to give you this coupon for gas, $500 worth of gas if you buy our car from us this weekend, big promotion. Well, if they're handing you a coupon for gas that they know no station will honor, that's a fraud, okay? Now, if they were sold a bill of goods by whoever was promoting those coupons, then they could turn around and bring in that guy who's probably long out of town, you know, unfortunately. So proving that it was the seller's intent to defraud you is a hard thing. But then that same incident would be a violation of the Virginia Consumer Protection Act.
And we'll talk shortly about the Virginia Consumer Protection Act, because in some cases it may be easier to prove a violation than under common law consumer fraud. But one of the things, of course, we learned in law school was that consumer fraud has certain elements. Could you briefly describe what the elements of consumer fraud, the things you have to prove in order to make a case out?
Well, the thing about fraud as a distinct from just a statute violation is that it must be a false misrepresentation of a material fact made intentionally and knowingly with the intent to mislead. And then the party has to actually rely on that and be misled, and there have to be damages. So if there's a misrepresentation that doesn't result in any damage, you know, you don't have a case. You might have your feelings hurt, but you don't have a case. If it wasn't intentional, then it's not fraud, but it could still be a violation of the Virginia Consumer Protection Act. And often people are very upset about their experience, but it really doesn't rise to the level of fraud. It's just a Virginia Consumer Protection Act violation, which is still critical to a consumer because you can get your attorney fees paid. The difficulty in establishing fraud is that there are all kinds of misrepresentations, particularly in auto sales, that are, as you mentioned, just puffery. They may just be an advertisement that says it's in excellent condition and it runs beautifully. Those kinds of statements have just been held by the courts to be just part of normal advertising, and no one's going to impute any material fact to that. Runs beautifully doesn't mean that it never skips or that the transmission is perfect or that it's been rebuilt engine or something. So you could have a car that is about to fall apart that a dealer might advertise as being in great shape. So obviously you have to go look at things. And I have a number of clients who have purchased things over the internet. They come to me because they bought them in Virginia or the seller was in Virginia, but they're in some other state and they had it delivered to them. And it turns out not to be what they understood from the advertisement. And that's when it becomes critical to examine the advertisements. And that's another recommendation for the consumer, is to print out any advertisements, keep copies of things on which you rely, because those are the representations that we're going to point to and say, here's this $500 gasoline card that we're giving away with every car. Obviously, that's a representation that it's worth something because it's meaningless if it's not.
So I gather it has to be a misrepresentation of a fact, and the more specific the fact, the better. Do you ever have situations, though, where what is misrepresented falls into the category of too good to be true? And if so, how do you deal with that?
Sometimes, yes. And some of these gift certificate type cases come into that category. Some dealers were saying, well, in 39 months, you'll get a check for $10,000. So buy this car this weekend under this promotion, and you know, you're going to get the certificate, and you have to fill out everything just right, and you have to keep it for 39 months, and then sometime after that, after it's processed, you'll get your check. Well, that really is kind of too good to be true, but you have really very good salesmen pitching this, and they pitched it very successfully and did it to a lot of people, and that's what convinces then the jury, the judge, that it was sold and that these people really did actually rely on that representation to make that purchase that day. And then what the dealership says, or the dealership's defense counsel says, is, gee, that was too good to be true. You should have known that right away. And now your statute of limitations has expired because the promotion was conveniently made to last more than 3 years, and your statute of limitations is only 2 years.
On consumer fraud, I see. Right. So I understand also on consumer fraud that you have to prove that by a higher standard than a normal civil non-criminal case. Could you talk briefly about that?
The proof of each of those elements is on, the burden is on the consumer. It's a higher standard, it's more difficult than just to point to elements that are clearly misrepresentations. To prove that something is a misrepresentation is pretty easy. For instance, in often auto fraud, you'll have vehicles that are actually used sold as if they're new. And that's pretty clear because the document will be marked new. There'll be a check mark on the box new when it was a demo. And a demonstration vehicle is considered a used vehicle in Virginia. So there you have a very clear, marked on the document, misrepresentation. But again, they'll just say that was a mistake. Gee, that was our bad. We should have marked the demo box. Come let us mark the right box for you, you know. And you didn't care because the odometer showed 3,000 miles on it, which should be a red flag to anybody buying a new car. But, of course, it has all kinds of consequences that you've lost months of your warranty if it really was titled to somebody else. Why did that person bring it back? Traded in so early, maybe there's something really wrong with the vehicle, and now you have to do all this investigation about that. But to establish that it's an intentional violation is a much more difficult thing. People aren't, they're going to deny it, and that's when it comes in to help show if they've done this over and over again.
And I guess the other thing to do is to bring the claim under the Virginia Consumer Protection Act as well. You'd mentioned that earlier. How does the Virginia Consumer Protection Act help people? How does that work?
Well, the Virginia Consumer Protection Act is very powerful, and people aren't aware of it. It's really what enables me to be in business because most consumers don't have a lot of money, and I know that I can take these cases. If there are clear violations, I can take these cases for a small cost deposit and be able to just rack up my time and be paid by the other side. That's the real benefit of the Virginia Consumer Protection Act. It covers a lot of other statutes that will then say a violation of this act is a violation of the Virginia Consumer Protection Act, such as the Automobile Repair Facilities Act is then a violation of the Virginia Consumer Protection Act. So if you suspect that someone's charging you too much, that they didn't really do the work they charged you for, if they refuse to give you your parts back that they say they replaced, those are all violations of both acts. And so you can get, and then if you can prove that that's intentional, then you can get three times the damages. So that's another difference between the Virginia Consumer Protection Act and a fraud case. If you can prove it's intentional and really egregious and they were really trying to defraud you, then you can get punitive damages under either the Virginia Consumer Protection Act or fraud and kind of take your pick, which is going to be higher.
But I gather that to just prove a violation under the Virginia Consumer Protection Act, there's no direct requirement that you prove that the violation was intentional.
Exactly. And I've come across defense counsel who don't seem to understand that. I've used the Virginia Consumer Protection Act in a number of oil change cases, for instance, Virginia Consumer Protection Act and the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. The Virginia Consumer Protection Act will cover a consumer for just mistakes by people. And of course, people are going to make mistakes. But if they forget to put the oil in your car before they crank it up and they ruin your engine, you know, they need to buy your new engine. And they will deny that. And then you have to be able to hire an attorney. So you have to get your attorney fees paid and your court costs, experts if you need it, and you can do that.
Which is a good segue to my last question, which is this. How do you prove these cases? Because whether it's a consumer fraud case or a case under the Virginia Consumer Protection Act, you've got to show that either there was an intentional misrepresentation or an innocent misrepresentation, some mistake was made, and often it can come down to a he said, she said type of situation. And as you pointed out, the person bringing the case, the consumer, has the burden of proof. So when it comes down to one person's word versus another, how do you prove the case, or do you need more than just that?
Some things are pretty obvious. If you have a new car that's driven into the bay and then it has to be towed out because the engine is ruined, that's pretty obvious. And you would hope that some of these people making these mistakes, you know, they have often have insurance, they have a bond, they can make a mistake and they can say, let's make it right. They can own it. But unfortunately, often they don't. And so when someone comes to me, they're going to be accused by the other side of inventing the problem or of causing the problem, in fact. And so often before I even take on a client, I will send them to an expert. In a case of an automobile case, send them to a mechanic who will give me an unbiased report, an objective review, and say, yes, I can tell this engine was ruined from a lack of lubrication. I can't tell you the timeline or who did what when, but I know that that's what caused this engine to be ruined. And so that's invaluable because in an oil change case, they will always send their expert who will deny the claim.
Thank you very much. We have been talking with Patty Anderson. She is an attorney who does consumer law, fighting for consumers, specializing in lemon law, warranty issues, and consumer fraud. Thank you so much for being on the show, Patty.
Thank you, Marty.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
It's time for our weekly quiz called, Is That Legal? We give you a legal question and three possible answers, one of which is incorrect, and we give the correct answers next week. If you're the first to email the two correct answers, we'll post your name on our show's website and send you a free copy of the Virginia State Bar's Handbook on Your Legal Rights and Responsibilities. Here's this week's question. Under Virginia's motor vehicle lemon law, which two things are true? A, you have lemon law rights for 18 months after the vehicle is delivered to you. B, you have lemon law rights on all vehicles bought from a dealer, both new and used. Or C, you have lemon law rights if the vehicle can't be fixed after three tries. If you know the two correct answers, email them by Friday to Marty at cvlas.org and be next week's winner. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. The unemployment insurance system in Virginia is in its 75th year in 2010, and on October 5, the Commonwealth Institute marked the occasion at the Virginia State Capitol. Join us next Wednesday when we present the remarks of the keynote speaker, Dr. Chris Howard, Harriman Professor of Government and Public Policy at the College of William & Mary, on the present and future challenges facing the unemployment system. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright. Oh.